Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to McKnight Tonight. My guest is absolutely loved by comedians. In fact, I don't think there's anyone who has more goodwill than this actor, model, tickle fetish video star, and all-round good guy. It's the one and only Ash Williams. Ash, are you fired up?
Fired up.
Welcome to McKnight Tonight.
McKnight Tonight. McKnight Tonight. Dude, what a tune.
You've got to have a catchy theme song.
Oh, mate, if that doesn't get you fired up, nothing wrong. But, mate, I just want to correct you with my little intro there. Retired model.
Retired?
Yeah. I had a couple of good months, and that was it. So,
hang on. If someone came and put down some cold, hard cash, you would turn that down?
Oh, of course. I mean, of course not. But, fuck it. Yeah, I'm back.
Of course you are. With everything that you've done, I'm really not sure where to begin because you've actually shared a lot of your experiences in comedy routines, in a lot of podcasts. I first became aware of you on the I Love Green Guide Letters podcast with Steele Saunders.
Yeah.
Is that where you sort of became, were you always known in the comedy community, or was it that podcast that started getting you re-known here?
Oh, I don't know, mate. I mean, if we graphed it, I reckon you could probably have a spike with Hughie and Kate.
Yes.
But you know what it's like? Podcast listeners are a different breed. So, and podcasting back then when I was doing I Love Green Guide Letters was kind of, the innovative time for podcasting. This is 5 years ago, 6 years ago. So, early adopters, as the marketers would say, were on board. And then I was like, these podcast fans are fucking crazy. and they were my kind of breed.
Yeah.
Their blood pumped at a certain BPM. So whatever, man, I enjoyed that. And then I've kind of kept going with the podcasts. And, big shout out to Steele, though, for having me on I Love Green Guide all those years ago.
Yes.
How'd that happen? Sorry, Rob. I wasn't meant to be on the show. So
really?
Yeah, no. I was sitting at Crescent Heights food court there. There's a Starbucks with Ed Cavalier, and Ed was meant to go on with Sam Simmons. You know, Sam Simmons, the comedian.
Yep.
And they were doing it at some hotel where Steele was. And then I'm sipping iced coffee with Ed, and Ed said, Sam Simmons can't do it. We need a fill-in. Do you want to do it?
Is that really how it came to be?
Yeah, and then I said, and Steele didn't really know me. Steele's like, who's this guy Ash? So then I turned up, and the rest is history.
That's hilarious. What do you love about the entertainment industry?
Bro, I mean, I love that there's no specific freeway to go on.
Mm.
I mean, there used to be only one freeway, but now there's freeways, roads, back alleys, and I like to think that I hang around the back alleys and every now and then I hitchhike onto a freeway or whatever, but back alleys is where you can have some fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a very good point. Look at your podcast.
Yeah.
It's created a whole way of you connecting with an audience. Once upon a time, you either had to go on TV, radio, right? And you were basically, you couldn't be anybody without the approval of some kind of executive.
Mm.
But now in the world of social media and podcasting, anyone can do anything and connect with an audience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, podcasting, with my podcast, I just, you know, turn on the microphone and yell into it on my own. And, you know, sometimes it's not until you listen back to it that you go, because you don't have that immediate laughter with a co-host or an audience, you don't sometimes know whether it's a good podcast or an average one. But, you know, there's a certain freedom with podcasting that the standards are low. Well, the expectations low.
Well, yes, but people don't stay with podcasts they don't like, and yours is certainly gaining traction. But it is a very different podcast from the point of view there is most of the time it is only you. Not many podcasts have a solo act.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is that there are no rules.
Yeah.
So when I say the standards are low, I mean like the code of standards are kind of non-existent. I thought I would have gotten a warning of some sort by now, but I'm still, you know, on zero. But I should get a warning soon. I'm very confident.
You talked about the back alley. Do you feel you've been in and around the entertainment industry for a long time? Do you feel like you've always been on the fringes and haven't made it to that level of pure fame? Because you've got you're quite well known,
yeah,
but you haven't been given that TV show.
Yeah, for sure. I think you're right. I think it's all about, you know, how you cut it in your brain, in the sense of like, how are you cutting your experience at that point in time? So maybe a few years ago, I was thinking that like, yeah, I just need that vehicle. If only I can be the Bachelor, or if only I can, whatever, you know, have some protagonist role on a show, I will make it. I will be famous, and I will whatever, you know, be harassed down the street, which is, you know, my dream. So, but what I've realized now is just that, like, just make it happen. Just get like, you know what I mean? It's like, if we're going to use a car analogy again on the freeway, just get in the car and. You know, you might not have an accelerator or a Ferrari that goes, you know, whatever, but just do it Fred Flintstone and start running with your car and at least have some movement. Because I'm all about, if the phone doesn't go now from said TV producer, not you, Rob, but like, God knows you're calling me all the time. But no, it's like, you know, what are you going to do if the phone doesn't ring? And it's liberating to not having to pander to, you know, radio stations or reality TV shows, and they're going to be the beholder of your success.
Yeah.
I don't need that anymore. You know, I think we equate success with how much money you make, and it's important. You've got to be able to put bread on the table, but like, you know, you've just got to keep things moving, and that's what I'm trying to do at the moment. And I am fired up. I mean, I use that term a lot, but I actually am fired up about my career and what I'm doing and my fans too, because they're all fired up.
Your fans are fired up.
They're animals. You know what, Rob? I honestly feel like a cult leader of sorts, because I feel like I've started something and it's like, oh, my God, these people are crazy. Like, you need to calm down. So
when you're telling people to calm down, you know that there's an issue,
well, because
right?
They look to me as their leader and I'm like, I don't know. But I can't tell them that.
Hey, I want to go back. Before you went to LA, you were starting to make inroads in this country. You were appearing on The Project. You were doing radio and all that kind of stuff. What made you decide to move to LA?
It was a no-brainer. Like, you know what I mean? Just in the sense that I didn't really use my brain to think about it. But I was doing Hughie and Kate, you know, for 3 years with Ed Cavalier, and I was lucky enough to be given, you know, a bit of a platform with that show. They gave me a lot of handballs and said, you know, do what you want, really. Like, we're going to lean on you for stories, and you know, it was a really good training ground. But I wanted more, and at the end of, I think it was end of 2011, it just wasn't kind of simpatico with me or Ed, so we left. And then I was like thinking, what am I going to do? Ed and I were trying to get a show up at Nova. One of the bosses basically said, that's definitely not going to happen. So I was like,
see, I still can't get that. You and Ed have such a chemistry. It is a show literally waiting to happen. Radio tries to manufacture chemistry between the talent, and it most often doesn't work out.
Yeah.
You have two guys here with such a backstory who know each other, who can tell funny stories. I'm today still shocked that you two don't have a radio show together.
Yeah. Oh, look, you know, we without saying who it was for, we trialed for a drive radio spot, and those trials went really well. You know, so much so that Ed even thought that we might have had it. And Ed is usually super cautious with his predictions. So he was like, "Man, we're actually a fucking chance here." But that didn't happen. But you know, what can you do? It's just, it's again, it's like
you just need the one right person on your side. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
To make it happen in anything, right?
Do you know what? You can't explain a formula if people don't understand the language.
Yeah.
And some people just don't get it. And that's not any fault of their own. Some people just, you know, we're all different. So Ed's obviously one of the most talented, you know, probably the most talented all-rounder in the country, I'd say, in comedy.
Yeah.
TV, radio, very unselfish, handballs. And sets me up and sets everyone up for the greater good of the show. So he's basically an undercover producer as well.
A very generous performer.
Oh, very generous. So, look, you know, whether we get a chance to work together on radio remains to be seen. But, of course, we've got that that chemistry that's so fun. It's so fun to work with Ed. And
I just love hearing you guys on Team Effort when Ash and Ed – is Ash and Ed coming back?
I don't know. I don't think it is because Ed's really busy. You know, he's got a kid. That's why I started the Ash Williams Show podcast because I needed to do something.
So let's go back to LA.
Mm.
So you've made the decision to go.
Yes. So yeah, getting back to that. So like I was, I remember I was in Chapel Street, February. No, it wasn't. It was probably January 20. Josh Lawson, the actor, was in town for a few weeks and. I remember I was hanging out a lot with Josh and Ed and I'm like, what am I going to do, you know? So that had about $25,000 and I knew that would keep me going for a couple of years, right? But I knew that I might need to get a job or at least something, and I remember lifting weights with Josh Lawson at Fitness First Chapel Street, and Josh is like, next week I'm going to the Oscars Gifting Lounge, which is the precursor to the Oscars, and they give you giveaways and half-price hotels and, you know, 25% off, you know, boats and stuff. I'm like, mate, that sounds like me. And he said, well, I've got a plus one. If you can get yourself to LA on this date, then you can have it.
Oh, wow.
So I said to him, I said, let me think about it. Let me go do some triceps. I'll come back in 15 minutes, right? So I come back and I said, mate, I'm in. And Lawson, he thought I was insane. He goes, what do you mean you're in? I go, I'm in. Okay. At the time, I owned a property in Windsor.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'm going to get a tenant in there and I'm going to essentially go to LA for 3 months to see what it's like with the ambition to possibly move there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and that I just got on a plane, never been to America, you know, didn't know anyone, knew Josh and maybe one other person.
So you went to the Oscars gift?
No. So what happened? What? No. So we went out the night before. So, yeah, so I landed and then the Oscars gifting lounge was in 2 days' time and we went out the night before and got so hammered on margaritas that we missed the Oscars gifting lounge. So because I remember waking up at like 10 a.m. and I was like, Lawson. He's like, who's this? I go, Tash, we were drinking last night. And he's like, I go, where are we going to the gifting lounge? He goes, mate, I've just found out that it was on like an hour ago. And I'm like, he didn't sound like he cared. I was actually relying on that.
Yes.
Yeah.
You wanted the freebies.
I just wanted something. Yeah.
So what was the biggest obstacle you had to overcome being in LA?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if there were any obstacles. Like, I got to tell you, I mean, I know that sounds almost ignorant to say that, but, like, the vibe and the flow of LA suited me because it's very
– it seems very good.
Yeah, it's also very open. If you're if you're, it's not like a pinball machine. So if you, if you're happy to pinball around to people and meet people, then LA is pretty cool. Of course, everyone you meet, you know, there's certain levels of bullshit, but like, you know, there's some good people, you know, amongst the liars. So, but even the lie, I could tell. I think what saved me is I went over to LA when I was 30. If I went to LA when I was, you know, 25 or younger, you just don't have the years under your belt. So, yeah, man, I don't know.
Did you get done over by anyone while you were over there?
Not badly. Like, not that I can remember.
Yeah.
A couple of girlfriends. You wouldn't call it being done over, but I wasted a lot of time trying to get, like, they were going to do a pilot, like, based on me. So, like, it was going to be like a reality show, and I was going to be doing all of these odd jobs, because basically I lived in LA for 12 to 18 months by working odd jobs off the internet.
And, yeah.
You know, I've spoken about these at length, but, you know, I was essentially an internet worker, right? And I would just prostitute myself out in some way or shape or form, you know, in a classy manner. I don't even know if you can say that word. And then I had all of these jobs. So I had like 30 jobs. And so what I was doing was working on a show with a production company, a very illustrious one. And, you know, if you talk about being done over as in like wasting hours upon hours of your time, you know, with nothing to show for it, then possibly. But
yeah, but that, you've got to give that a go, right?
It's part of it, mate. You've got to have a horse in the race. You know, it's, and also it's show business. Everything's like that. That's why you need a few horses in the race.
Yeah.
And not all projects get up, so it's all good.
I mean, you've spoken about the jobs you've done with the tickle videos vodka shots and all that kind of stuff. But one of the things I actually based a segment on Studio 10 around it was the high heel Guinness World Record attempt you did. I think it was True TV from memory.
It was, well done.
I've got a clip. Let's have a listen.
A high heel race. I'm excited. I just wanted to set a really fast time.
Get set.
And they're off. Jesse, out of nowhere, and Ash, and there's a run, Forrest.
Ash got off to a fast start. Unfortunately, he overplays his ability. Just as quickly, he stumbles and falls behind Jesse and Forrest.
How much fun was it doing stuff like that? Because you were literally in a pair of high heels, you've come running out, and you look like you're gonna, you look like you've been wearing high heels your whole life, and you were gonna win it, right?
Yeah.
And then you've just completely lost it.
Yeah. Well, I took it seriously. Like, you know, I taped my or strapped my ankles, and you know what I found out though when I turned up to the filming is that a lot of the guys brought their own high heels. I didn't know you could do that. So that was an unfair advantage because they could, like, you know, practice.
No, I love the fact you're looking at me so intensely
I'm still,
like,
I'm still filthy
about it.
It's
like it's bringing back bad memories for you.
It's just I feel like I was jilted. You know, it's like they're on anabolic steroids. They're the Ben Johnson of the high heels races. But, like, you know.
Is that because you like to win?
I love to win. I love to win. Yeah. I mean, it's simple because, you know, I've got a tennis background. So, like, when I was young, you know, I played a lot of tennis and yes, could have turned pro. Not my words. Look, you know, and being the eldest of, like, you know, I've got three younger brothers. You know, you're just competitive, and I'm uber competitive. But I guess the reason why I wanted to win that high heels race was because I wanted to get as much TV exposure as possible,
more screen time.
Yeah. And I just landed in LA when I did that.
Oh, that was right at the beginning, was it?
I got paid $50 for that cash. But I could bring a friend.
I actually would have thought you'd get a little bit more than that.
I think it's a little bit less. $50. So it's all very, I don't know, it's pretty dodgy over there because you've got, like,
there's so many people wanting to get a break, right?
Also, you've got union and non-union.
Yeah.
So all of the non-union stuff is like just, yeah, you're going to get ripped off. But, like, right, if you know that's the deal, then you're happy. You're just like $50 cash plus you get unlimited food for the whole day and you're like, this is cool. And plus you can bring a friend. I'm like, I brought my mate Marty. And I was like, mate, guess what? You're on a film set.
And there's free food for the
day. It was the greatest. I still remember walking into the buffet area and it was just magic. And then I said, you know, can we just eat from any, what do you call it, saucepan? And they're like, any saucepan you want. I'm like, Jesus, Hollywood. And then they pointed to the high heels on the floor and I was like, they said, pick whichever ones you want. And there were three or four and I just picked the gold ones just because.
You went for the flair.
I had this thing where I was wearing gold hot pants like years and years ago for a Cleo Bachelor campaign. So the gold resonated with me. But, mate, fucking LA. Time flies. I still remember that day vividly.
So is that what LA for you was like, though, looking for opportunities where, one, I can get money and food, you know, like because you're having to be careful about your budget, right?
Yeah. You know, I guess sometimes you do things without thinking about what you're doing or understanding why you're doing it.
Yeah.
So it took me maybe 10 months to understand, and also by speaking to Ed Cavalier, who you know, is still very good friends with, he would hear my stories and it's almost like he just was like, because when you're driving the car, you don't realise how crazy the stories are.
Yeah.
And so then Ed was like, so you're doing what? You did that and you're doing that at the gay bar? You're charging what? You're letting them do what? And then, like, you know, then I realised that this was kind of a formula to get material to then use in stand-up, to then use in whatever. So
it's been a goldmine for you since coming back.
It's been amazing. But you know what? Now Robert's got to stop because, you know, I'm happy to talk about these stories, but I've been living in Bondi now for, you know, 8 months and I've got some new Bondi material and I'm working on a show now for next year for the Melbourne Sydney Comedy Festivals. That will be 100% unabated fresh content, fresh Fabulous. Stories, all real, all true.
And is Lachie Hume helping you with that show?
No, he's not.
Oh my! Well, he said on Team Effort that he was going to produce the show for you.
Yeah. So Lachie, we put the call out on Team Effort podcast that I was looking for a producer and then Lachie was going to come on board. Yeah. But Lachie, you know, we spoke about it, but yeah, Lachie's too crazy. And, you know, you can't have two crazy people. I've got now another guy. I won't name him, but once, yeah, you know, he works in TV and he's a hard worker and he understands structure and all that stuff. So he's kind of helping me in a way of getting all of my ingredients, and then we're going to try and make it into a, you know, tasty souffle with only the best ingredients.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
How hard, or did it get hard in LA? Were there times where you felt down and out?
I think it definitely gets hard. I mean, otherwise you're not human. I mean, or you're not pushing yourself hard enough. LA is a lonely place. Like, you've got to be matched tough. You've got to. I mean, but what I do is a very selfish pursuit anyway. And like, and you kind of use the analogy of tennis and whatever. It's like, you know, a lot of it has parallels with life. So, like, you know, I suppose match tough in the sense of like, I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to show people what I've got. LA has those moments like anywhere, peaks and troughs, and it's all good. Sometimes you can get the best material out of whatever, you know, the lonely times, or, you know,
the hard times and the tough times make great stories, right?
Well, that's it. What's the old comedy formula? What is it? Tragedy plus time equals comedy.
Yeah.
But there's always content and stories, and again, some of them are during the harder times, you know, during breakups or when you've been fired or whatever. And it's sometimes not until you look back on it and you think, geez, yeah, that is funny.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you got to do anger management,
yeah,
was that a moment where you felt, I've made it? Like, you're actually got a speaking role, you're on a set with Martin Sheen.
I certainly thought I'm going all right.
Yeah.
Because not many other Aussies back then even to this day, have done comedy sitcoms of that ilk. You know, Martin Sheen, Charlie Sheen. So I backed my strategy in the auditions too, because I just went in and just did what I thought was funny. It was never meant to be in Australian accent. I just did it in Australian and it worked. So, but, you know, I think it's – I just think sometimes – I like comedy acting, but I think sometimes with acting it's just a little – each to their own, but for me I just find acting a little bit not enjoying the pie. You're enjoying the pie without the sauce. I like live things. I like things that are
Is that because you like the spontaneity of how things can go wrong and how you have to react to things?
Yeah, and I just love being able to utilize who I am because I think that that's my strength,
yeah.
My stories, you know, everything that I've learned and garnered, be it stories, be it comedy skills or whatever, that all goes in to doing things in the moment. And I think that acting, good luck to you, but like, there's so many great actors out there, and it's like, again, it's like, you know, if that's your cup of tea, then so be it. But, you know, for me, I just find it a little bit limiting.
No, you should absolutely. Your path is the freedom to podcasting and stand-up. And, of course, I still can't believe you haven't been The Bachelor.
Yeah, I mean, look, Robbie, it's...
I cannot believe it. I think that's a no-brainer.
But, you know, I told you what happened with that. I told you. I'm pretty sure. Like, you know, they flew me up, you know, and they were like, do you want to be The Bachelor? I did the pre-interview meeting with the cameras and stuff, and, you know, it's all good. It's everything. I really do believe in.
Did they ever tell you why it didn't...
Yeah. The feedback was they didn't think that I was truly ready to fall in love.
Ah.
Yeah. But...
Do you agree with that?
No, I think it was.
You seem pretty open to the opportunity if it was there, if the right person was there.
Well, what happened? I mean, so I walk in there and then they, for the first 10 to 15 minutes, so there's four people in the room. It's kind of like you're performing to
couple
four
XX.
Or X Factor judges, right? And they're all there. And then they kept leaning on stories about LA, right?
Yeah.
And I've got like old pre-written stand-up stories. So I went into almost stand-up mode,
right.
And I was getting the laughs, which is what I'm kind of predisposed to do. And maybe I went for too many laughs. I probably did 10 to 15 minutes of like stand-up at the start, but like they wanted the more stoic stuff, which I reckon...
They wanted authenticity.
Yeah, but I reckon I brought that home towards the end. But at the end of the day, again, I'm so thankful that I'm not The Bachelor. Because it forced me to create something else and create the Ash Witham Show podcast. And what it also, aside from that, it actually made me dig in a bit and hustle. Because the great thing that LA teaches you is to hustle. No one owes you anything. No one really knows who you are. You need to introduce yourself. You need to be hungry or you'll get nowhere. And I think sometimes in Australia, you know, you can, for me anyway, I was starting to get a little bit complacent, thinking you're too good for some jobs.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. And, I just got hungry again. And that was kind of a key ingredient for me moving to Sydney, because I needed to build my profile in Sydney because I'm missing out on these jobs like The Bachelor, because I'm not as known either.
Yes.
In Sydney.
Yeah, you're very well known in Melbourne, but there's an argument you're not as well known in Sydney.
Yeah.
That is changing, I feel.
It is changing, yeah. So, you know, I'm just I'm fired up and, you know, I keep using that term, but it's...
It describes you, though.
It does. It does. And I guess, I don't know, man, you got to enjoy what you do, and I enjoy getting up and making things happen.
So since you... What was the determining factor on coming back from LA, though?
Truth be told, I'd run out of money. No, I'd...
That's a fair reason.
No, but I'd always run out of money. Like, mate, honestly, the number of times... It was like a rent race every month. I'm not even joking. I'd have, like, you know, 5 days to make rent. But I just been offered a soft offer to be a doctor on Days of Our Lives, right? And they said, you're our doctor. And I was like, I've got to go back for a wedding. Ed Cavalier was getting married to Tiffany Hall.
Yep.
And they said, you can't go, you're a doctor. I said, listen, if you make me an offer, I'll stay. And sliding doors, Robbie, because I remember, you know, as much as I love Ed and Tiff, I was like, I was plugged into the LA main vein. I was, you know, bleeding LA. I genuinely thought I'd never live back in Australia.
Right.
And I remember being at Ralph's supermarket and I think I spoke to Kate Langbrook and I was like, Kate, I've got this, I've got that, and I don't know if I can come back. And she said, Ash, you've got to come back, all right? Again, if they make you an offer, they make you an offer. So then I came back to Australia for the wedding with the view of going back to LA within 10 days, but I never got back to LA because a few opportunities popped up in Australia and then I was like, hang on, I'm making some money here.
Yeah.
I don't have to hustle as hard and I can start building, you know, my brand a bit quicker here.
Yep.
So that was why I never went back. And I don't think I would go back, you know, under those. I'd only go back if I was working there on something I wanted to work on.
That's amazing. The thought of you as a doctor on Days of Our Lives.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look. I know how to be a doctor. It's because, well, you know, my dad's a doctor, my brother's a doctor, like for real. Mum's.
Presumably, you'd be the topless doctor.
Yeah, I'd be. Yeah, I'd be the dodgy doctor. I'd hope like yeah, there's the doctor who's doing the wrong things.
So, after all this, you've come back from LA. You're setting up shop in Australia. You've moved to Bondi. What is the Ash Williams brand? You know, everyone talks about brand. What is the Ash Williams brand?
Yeah, it's such a wanky thing to talk about. It really is.
I know.
I brought it up. Even when I said that, I was like, I'm one of those guys. But I love the guys who work in cafes and they're like, oh, you know, I'm it's wrong for my brand. I'm like, mate, you make fucking cappuccinos. The fuck you? Anyway, dude, I think it depends what we're talking about. Like, again, it's like, I think it's just real stories.
Authenticity, I think, is absolutely your brand. And is it about making deals? You know, like you talk about the hustle and you're always talking about the deals. You know, like I think that's part of your brand. Yeah. And I think that's why people get on your side, you know, because you're giving it a go and they want to see you succeed.
Also, I'm telling my listeners all of the gory details. I'm not one who will keep the truth from listeners. So I think they feel like they can peek behind the curtain.
Yes.
You know, at what's going on.
Does that cause a problem in relationships?
Yeah, of course.
Because you are so honest?
Yeah, of course. And that's something, you know, I've got to take into consideration. But, you know, I always want to produce the best content. I always want to, you know, get the laugh. So, you know, until I can meet a girl
who's
up for that and understands that we would be, you know, you would be comedy material in you know, maybe I'll make something up about you. I don't know. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, who knows? But, like, you know, it's like, it's also not to be taken seriously. It's like, who cares? A lot of girls who I get into relationships with, they're like, oh, you said this on the radio. And I'm like, did I? And they're like, yeah, you said that about such and such, or you said such and such was cute. I'm like, I don't know. I was just being polite. It's like we don't need to stress out about anything.
Don't worry. I get it because I have gotten in trouble for saying stuff publicly too.
Yeah. So, look, I don't
know. A bit harder in a marriage, let me tell you.
It would be. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, it's all good, man.
Well, when you talk about your brand, let's have a listen to basically your brand on show in a commercial.
I want to take the audience for a ride, whether that's in front of the camera or a live audience. I love doing stand-up. I'm always ready to step on stage. Every show is different and anything can happen. I've got to be ready for whatever the audience throws at me. My life could take me anywhere at any time. But no matter what tomorrow holds, I'm ready to hit the ground running.
Da-da-da-da-da. What do you think when you hear that? Is that brand Ash?
No, not really. I think that's a little bit too polished.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was I was reading a script that I didn't write.
It's funny you say that. It doesn't feel real.
Yeah, I mean,
it doesn't feel like Ash Williams.
Well, you got to remember too, it was probably three years ago. And, you know, I think it was a creative agency who said, here you go, read this. And, you know, it's like, fuck, I think I changed it a little bit, but, you know, it's all good. I mean, 3 years seems like a long, feels like a long time ago. I wouldn't read that. I wouldn't read that now.
Yeah.
But again, that was, I got paid really well for that.
Yeah.
But I don't wear their shoes anymore.
You mentioned that you almost got the gig as the doctor in Days of Our Lives, but you did get a soapy. You went on to Neighbours.
Mm.
What was that experience like?
Yeah, that was, you know, I mentioned I'm a retired model, if you want to call it that. I didn't really model, but, like, you know, I did a little bit.
You did a few book covers, mate, romance covers.
I did a few,
covers.
Yeah, I did whatever. You've got to be a yes man if you want to make it in show business. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Exactly. Just have as many opportunities as you can. And I spoke to my then modelling agent, who I hadn't worked with in, you know, 18 months, and I said, listen, let's get a coffee. Why are we working together? Because unless you can tell me why, you know, we're continuing this relationship, then I think we should.
So you laid it on the line.
Yeah, I said, well, what are we doing? In the nicest possible way, I just said, well, what are we doing? How can we help each other? Otherwise, we leave, you know, amicably. And they said, listen, I said, what can you do for me? And they said, well, what about Neighbours? Do you want to do Neighbours? We have a relationship with them. I said, yes, get me an audition for them. So then I got a call the next day saying, there's an audition. You're the only person auditioning. It's for this role. Blah, blah, blah. Went in there, went well. They called me up and said, you know, you can do a 3 or 4 month role. And that was it.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was fine, man. It was fine. Again, I wouldn't want to do it anymore. I just found it limiting. It's
interesting seeing your body language talking about that. It doesn't look like it was a good experience for you.
It was just like a lot of work. Yeah. And it pulls me away from, like, what I want to do. Like, you've got to memorize all the lines. And it's just, I don't know, man. I mean, nothing against dramatic actors. Each to their own. You know, we all like eating different food. But, like, yeah. I just found it a little bit I'm used to some really high highs and I just didn't even get near it.
Ah, this is interesting. So in the creative field, I think we do work off the adrenaline rush we get from creativity, right? Mm. So and then you hit the lows. Well, I certainly do. So
yeah.
So you weren't getting that creative high from doing Neighbours.
No, I felt like a hamster on the hamster wheel, and I felt like that's the closest I've come in years to working a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
And I'm there reading lines that someone else has written and, you know, it's a more dramatic role, and I just found it a little bit robotic.
So when you're not getting that creative high, do you start crashing or do you get the really highs and the real
because I was still doing podcasts and still doing stand-up.
So you're getting that creative outlet.
Yeah, absolutely, but not as much as I wanted because I was having to work hard. I had to bust my guts to actually do that dramatic stuff because I'm a very animated person. I had to pull back the animation. So, it's, you know, some people can't do comedy. I mean, or they struggle to do something that's skewed that way.
Yeah.
I'm probably the other way, whereas, like, if it's got to be less on it, I've got to work hard to do less.
I see. That makes sense.
Yeah, so, you know, I was working with an acting coach from LA, you know, just – Getting things down, you know.
Did try to make it work. You were trying to push it on the publicity front. And
Yeah. But again, it's all good, man. Like, I got to tell you, man, like, that dramatic acting, it's like the 10th or 11th thing that I would do. You look at, like, all of the vocations or the types of entertainment work that I do and want to do, it's about 10th or 11th.
Yeah.
It came up because there was an opportunity. And I saw that purely as a profile builder.
Yep.
And that's why I thought, yeah, 3-4 months, all good. We can tick that box. And I'm glad I did it. So, yeah, passed a lot of dudes.
How important is friendship to you?
It's a good question. It's important, but also I'm not someone who would stay in a friendship for loyalty. I think you can, like, We all grow out. We all outgrow each other. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes you can go at the same pace and be lucky enough to have friends for life. But, like, you know, I've got, like, old school friends that I'm still friends with. But, like, you know, you're not best mates like you used to be. I'm more best mates now with people who work in comedy or people who, you know, I've got like interests with.
Like-minded people.
Yeah. Because they get all of the references. And they understand what I'm trying to do and I understand what they're trying to do.
The bond between you and Ed seems very, very tight.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. You know, we speak a lot. We speak probably every day.
Right.
Yeah. So but we just talk about nonsense. Like, we really, no, honestly, we just, like, I know Tiff, Ed's wife, is always, you know, if Tiff gets home or whatever, it's like Ed's been caught with his hand in the cookie jar. He's like, mate, no, Tiff's home. I've got to go. But, you know, we absolutely just talk nonsense. Yeah.
And is that the bond? Is that is he your best friend?
I don't know. I think I've got a few best friends.
But you're quite comfortable within yourself, aren't you? You know, like, you talked about being the solo in LA and living by yourself, quite comfortable with that.
I love it. Like, I enjoy my own time. I really just, you know, man, I have fun. I got to tell you, like, I just find everything quite funny.
Which is quite interesting to me because you're so engaging at talking to people. You can walk into a room and just talk to anyone. Personally, nothing could give me more fear than that. I can't go into a room and just talk to anyone. But you are the kind of person who can, but you still like that solitude.
Yeah, sometimes you need a break. You know, sometimes you just want to bloody eat a burrito. And, you know, I met all these people last night because I was house hunting and I was loving meeting all of these psychos that wanted me to move in with them. And I met this guy who was definitely like a former soldier and like he was going to kill me if I moved in with him. I just knew it. And he's like – but also, like, as I'm in that experience, you know, I'm loving it.
Yeah.
I'm loving it. And I had like three or four of those experiences last night. And then, like, afterwards, I just want to go and eat a burrito on my own.
Yeah.
So that I can digest those experiences and go, wow, yeah, cool. It's almost like me collating and mining bits of material and stand-up or podcast bits, you know, because I think you do need to have that light and shade.
So are you the kind of person who enjoys the moment or enjoys it more once you've sat and thought about that moment, once you're out of it, thinking back on it?
No, I'm enjoying the moment. I enjoy the moment, but, like, I like to be able to sometimes, you know, just go, if it's a crazy moment, you go, yeah, that was funny. But sometimes you're just not thinking about anything. Sometimes you're just eating a burrito, which is fine too, you know. Like, you know, sometimes you're talking to someone, you might be out for dinner with someone and you can't be bothered listening to their shit. You know what I mean? You're just like, oh, I just want to fucking, and they're like, are you even listening? I'm like, yeah. I'm not listening. But, like, you know, it's like, I don't know. I think each to their own. I enjoy just – I love going to the gym on my own too. I find it's like a meditative thing. It's like go and pump out some weights and listen to some music or listen to podcasts or whatever. I mean, we've all got our own things to relax.
Yeah.
And, I enjoy just getting amongst life and meeting people, you know what I mean?
So what's your ultimate job?
It's a good question, Rob. I haven't got an answer for you. I do want to host my own show similar to McKnight Tonight. but no.
You need a catchy theme song.
McKnight Tonight is what it's going to be called. I'm going to change my name to Brian McKnight and then in nothing to do with the R&B singer. Who sang that song? One, I make your dream come true. Two,
did he?
I fall in love with you. Yeah,
I'm aware he exists. Three, I haven't investigated.
You're the only one for me. And five, from five, it really loses its edge. That song, but but look, I know I can host shows, you know, because, like, I like to muck around and be the kind of loose comedy talent, as they say, inverted commas. But, like, you know, I can host a show and keep the conversation going. So I know I can do something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think you just wait and see up for grabs. And I love doing live stuff and hosting live things. And, you know, it's a really interesting question, that whole what's your ideal job? Because I just want to be doing good things. I want to make good things. So whether that's a really sick stand-up show that's 50 minutes, that's like a ride from go to woe, and I'm like, I'm happy with that. You know, that's that. Or it's a podcast, you know, or I host some whatever awards night, or I host whatever, host the Logies or whatever. Who knows? Dave Hughes might fucking retire from doing his opening gambit. But, you know, you just want to be doing good things and fucking feeling good, I think. And
I think that's a great answer.
And don't you think, and also utilizing your talent and skill set, because we all, at least I hope all of us, have had that feeling when you've done something and you're like, yes.
There's no better feeling in the world.
It's like, you know, you've played whatever, Beethoven's concerto, and you haven't missed a note, and it just feels fucking good.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're all striving for, things that feel good. So, I mean, I think that's the answer.
Well, mate, I cannot wait to see what you do next.
Yeah, mate. I've got a few irons in the fire. I'll tell you something I'm not doing.
What's that?
I'm a celebrity.
Ah, you're not. You're ruling yourself out. You're not in the jungle next year.
I will not be in the jungle next year. And I'm going to say this. I will never be in the jungle.
Ash, really?
Why would I?
Well, it's good for profile.
Is it?
Yeah, I actually still think it is.
I just think, whatever, man. I mean, fuck. Again, it's like, you've just got to make it happen on your own.
You've got to make it happen on your own.
I wouldn't. Yeah, I wouldn't do it. There was a time when I would, obviously we touched on before, when all you want is the phone to ring and said producer to say, "Will you do this show?" But I wouldn't do it. I mean, fuck it. Why would I?
Yeah.
Like, again, it is a profile builder, but like, that's well, if you don't need it, you don't need it.
I think that's a fair point, mate. You can follow Ash on social media at AshWilliams1 and Ash and the Ash Williams Show. His podcasts include, but are not limited to, Ash and Ed, although apparently that's no more, Team Effort, and, of course, the Ash Williams Show. Ash, I have just loved this. Thank you so much. You know that I'm a big fan.
There's got to be more questions, Rob. How long are we going for?
we've done 50 minutes.
No, you've got to ask me some, like, a couple of what do you – is there any other questions that you feel like you want to ask me?
All right. Well,
I feel like I'm just warming up.
Oh, okay. I thought I was boring you. That's why I warmed it up. I'll be honest.
I love it.
All right. What's the opportunity that you got closest to but missed out on, and that you just think, if I had only fucking got that, I would be a star?
There is one. I'm just trying to remember what it was. Well, there was something. Fuck. How sad is that, though? If only I got that, I would have been a star. It's like the start to a fucking Judy Garland musical. I don't know, bro. I mean, I guess you could say The Bachelor, but who gives a fuck? I don't know. I mean, you know, I was thinking the other day, I've applied for so many reality shows, like, through the years.
Yeah.
And one of my funniest – this is a ripper, actually. I've never told this story on a podcast. This is a ripper. So I was auditioning to be the host for Quizmania.
Oh, yeah.
This is back in the day, Channel 9. And everyone auditioned, like everyone.
It's
like
one of
people
those
from
calls.
Service stations were fucking auditioning. And I went in and, you know, the script said, because it's one of those games that, like, you know, do you think it will float or sink? Text in your number and you can win $1,000.
Yeah.
You know, it's on at like 2 a.m. You're just speaking to people who are pulling bongs and stuff. And then you're like, the audition said, will the hole punch sink or float? Right? The hole punch. So I read that.
Yeah.
I remember auditioning at my mum's, like, out loud into a microphone, into like a PC, thinking, yeah, I got this. This is fucking, this is going to kill. And And so anyway, it wasn't until years and years later, I'm talking maybe 10 years later. So this happened in like 2001, and I reckon, no, maybe 2009, I was talking to a friend, and we were talking about the Quizmania audition, and he goes, yeah, how about that fucking hole punch, huh? You got to see if it sinks or swim. I go, yeah, mate. Yeah, stupid, really. I said, stupid, really. I mean, of course it's going to sink. And then he goes, what? And I go, you know, the hole punch, because the fucking hole punch is made of, you know, it's a stapler. It's really fucking heavy. And he was like, no, you meant to stick the hole punch in the water. You know, like the little round.
Oh, the bit that comes out.
The little bit that comes out. And so I remember I said to him, I said, what? And, you know, my life was flashing before my eyes. I was like, oh, my God. And I still remember. And then I just – now the look on the producer's face, who was Henry Stride, made sense now, because I remember going into that audition, seeing the fish tank, saying, will the hole punch sink or swim? And then I chucked in the whole hole punch.
So you actually did that?
No, I chucked the whole thing in. And then I was like, and it sunk. It sunk badly. And then I remember looking to her at the end. I said, is that it? And they're like, thanks for coming in. I was like, you know what? And again, it wasn't until 10 years. I thought I killed it. For 10 years, I was like, those bastards at Quizmania. But anyway, mate. Yeah. Anyway, give me another question though, Rob. Give me another one. Or should I ask you a question?
What do you want to know about me?
Well, I want to thank you for getting me on Studio 10, because that was a good launching pad for me to come back to Australia. But
no, I loved having you on. In fact, people got worried about me because I loved having you on so much.
Yeah, mate. No, we did some good stuff with Ida and the guys down there. But surely you've got one more question, Robbie. Any question?
So was that your worst audition, or have you had worse?
Oh, fuck. I can't remember. I'm sure I've had. Can you get worse than that? You know what? I was very close to getting on Big Brother as well. I suppose I was very close one year. The year that Galen was on.
Oh, yeah.
I was down to the last 20 or something, like 25. Yeah, that was a good year that. In terms of bad auditions, nothing really.
So what happened with Big Brother?
I just didn't get in.
Oh.
No, but like I thought I was in.
Right.
That was fucking crazy, those auditions. Like, that is one fucking loose audition. Like, they're like, all right, when we press the buzzer, you're going to kiss every girl in the room. And I'm like, really? Yeah, this is 2000. And... Well, I think I was given a card, right, or something, and, like, you've got to kiss the girl next to you. And then, like, I think the whole premise of them watching you like you're an experiment is to show that you're, you know,
you're willing to do anything.
Animal. Yeah. So I was like, all right. And then I just, I don't know, I kissed a fair few people. And then they're just like, all right, thanks. But like, yeah, I thought I was going to get close. But again, I'm glad I didn't, because it's, you know, you're just going to keep developing.
Is that how you have to look at it, though? You keep saying, I'm glad this didn't happen, I'm glad that didn't happen. But really, at the time, if they had happened, you would have been over the moon.
But if that had happened, I wouldn't have kind of developed the way I have. Like,
so you think it's made you a better comedian?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I'm still, like, you know, working hard to get better. And
Why do you think comedians love you? Because every time you do something, the support you get on Twitter from the Tony Martins and all the other comedians, do you understand the support you have in that community?
No, yeah, of course I do. I feel not all comedians.
Of course.
But you know what? The ones who don't know me, who've never met me properly, they're usually the ones who, might not be as vocal. But that's fine, because we don't know each other. But
sure.
for the better part of people who I've worked with and who know who I am, I guess I'm not your normal comedian. You know, what you see is what you get in many regards. And, you know, I think they just like that, you know, I am who I am, and it's a bit different, mate. You know, it's like, fuck.
Well, you have led an extraordinary life. You know, like, I can't think of anyone who has led the kind of crazy-ass life that you've lived, because you give anything a go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the secret? You just give – it's almost like, you know, the concept of saying yes to everything.
Yeah. I'm a big yes guy. I think it's a yes before it's a no. It's always yes, but, you know what I mean, rather than no, but yeah, I mean, I'm lucky that, like, you know, again, I've got so many different ways I can use these stories or you know, weird interactions, that it's all content. It's and I don't mean to sully any experiences, like some kind of, you know, that I'm some kind of sociopath just going out getting experiences for the sake of it. It's just like, I'm enjoying it, but I'm also like, yeah, this is fucking cool. And it's also a good way to live your life. Like, you know, just going out, because we haven't got very long. We haven't got, like, we're all getting old. And I don't know, man. I don't know. I just think, get out and have some fun. Don't take things too seriously. I think people take life too seriously.
Do you ever take life too seriously? Do you ever have those lows? Because you always seem up and happy and on fire, but do you have those low lows?
No, I don't have. I'm lucky that my kind of default is optimistic. I'm lucky like that. You know, you've got to, you can't be frigging up on the fucking clouds all the time.
No,
but, you know, you just got to come down and that's life. You know, and that's what we were talking about before. It's like LA, some of the more grinding times is when you get all of your material.
Yeah.
And it makes you appreciate, you know, the fireworks and stuff when they're there. It's part of life. But, you know, without getting too philosophical.
Oh, you can get philosophical, mate. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, but look, you know, I think we're all pretty lucky, but I've certainly, it's not lost on me that I'm very, very lucky to be doing what I'm doing, to be making a living for basically living my life.
Yeah. That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. A lot of people are so perplexed, though, about my career and how I make money. Like, if I had a dollar anytime someone said, so how do you make money and what do you do again, I'm like, Mum, I've told you that it's, you know, it's a million different things without having a full-time job.
Yeah but you make a living.
Yeah,
and that's the great thing.
Yeah
You know, so we're sitting in a beautiful apartment overlooking Bondi. It's fabulous. What a view.
Yeah, this is the Bondi production office for the Ash Williams Show. This is it. I've been very lucky to live here. We're actually moving out in 2 days. The landlord's coming back from Japan. So we're going to move out. And it was funny because my current housemate's such a lovely guy. And I pay $400, right, which is like not much to live in this place.
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
This is a proper pad. And I said to him last week, I said, listen, Lukey, just so you know, I'm willing to double what I'm paying. So I'll pay $800 a week. And he said, if you add another $200 to that, that's what I've been paying for the last 6 months.
See, you've got great friends. People look after you.
I met this guy on the internet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I met him. We did that deal and, like, 2 minutes. It was a 2 minute.
So how do you get a deal like that where he's paying such a large amount of the rent?
So he was looking for someone to pay $600. Yeah. I walked in, you know, knowing that I could get that down. So I also knew the ad had been on the internet for like a month. So I knew that this guy must be a little bit desperate. So I went in there and I said, listen, bro, great joint, great view, but, like, I'm at 400. And then I said, look, you do the math, you let me know. Walked away. Like any deal, you've got to be able to walk away. And then he called me that night and said, 400's good. I was in the next day.
And you've had plenty of notice that you're moving out, but you didn't start doing anything until 2 days ago about it, finding a new place?
No, it's just not how I roll. Like, you know, because, yeah, we've had a month warning that we're getting kicked out. Even I speak to Ed, and Ed's like, aren't you stressing out? I'm like, no, man. Yeah, I'll be fine. I'll find somewhere. But I found somewhere. I just found a dude today who I think is trying to rip me off. But, it's...
But you'd found multiple places, hadn't you? You're like, yeah, had Spanish, some Spanish girls.
Yeah, the Spanish girls seemed like a sure thing last night. Like they were, because again, you do these housemate dates, so to speak. It's sort of like Tinder dating without, the heavy petting. And it's like, I went in there and just gave them like 15 minutes of my best material. I was just pumped up as like a stand up gig before I went in there. I was like. Doing all of my Spanish gear. I was doing Rafael Nadal stats. And, they were laughing. I thought these girls are definitely going to want to have me stay. But, I lost that deal. They texted me like an hour ago and said, we gave it to Dave Hughes. No, but it's – But like, anyway, it's all good, man. It's again, I think Bondi is such a – do you get to Bondi much?
No, never.
Bondi's – it's a game, man. It's kind of like LA. It's the best equivalent of LA in Australia. It's a bit of a game, man. It's an experience game, and there's weirdos here and there's normal people, and you just go out there and you meet them, and it's a real life Monopoly game. And I guess I'm moving from the equivalent of Mayfair where we are now, and then I'm moving to. Well, be the equivalent. Probably not the Strand. Probably not Leicester Square. I'm going to go with someone like Paul Mall. I'm going to Paul Mall.
Okay.
The purple ones that are $160, something.
Anyway, I think you're right. your Monopoly.
Oh, pounds. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thanks, Robbie. I mean, I've had a ball coming on. Congrats with everything that you're doing.
Thank you, mate.
You know, I don't know. If the audience, get into it much, but mate, you're one of the best TV producers that I've worked with. No, absolutely, and the sky's the limit, mate. You'll be doing what you want.
Well, as the song says, I'm a washed up TV producer, but I appreciate it, mate. I appreciate your kind words.
Yeah,
and I think you're a real talent. I have. Loved working with you, and I appreciate your time. I appreciate you having me into your house. And, mate, I think you're a fucking legend.
Thank you, Robbie. Yeah, mate. Right back at you. I'm happy with where I am. And, you just got to keep fucking getting better. That's
absolutely.
Yeah. Listen to my podcast. I know you plugged it before, but download it.
Give us all the details, mate.
If you're still listening, this has probably been going for fucking 90 minutes, but just go to Ash Williams Show on any of the podcast platforms. We have some stuff going on at Instagram and Twitter.
And I hope I never get culled from the 500.
Oh, you're in there. No. The cull is it's stopping.
Nah.
So it's that's the thing. It's like just as a backstory, it's like I've capped the followers on Instagram. So we can only have 500 at any point in time. So we've now got over 1,000 trying to get in, which is pretty
amazing.
Crazy.
Amazing.
But yeah, it's fucking insane. So yeah.
You've created a cult. You've created by closing the doors. You've created a want. That's good marketing.
It is good marketing. I just wanted to flip it because I find social media is really boring. It's so funny. It's so funny that the tropes and the social media. It's all the same. And I was like, what can I do that's a little bit different? So it's something fun for the podcast fans. Yeah.
Yeah, love it, mate.
Yeah.
Well, once again, thank you very much for being on McKnight Tonight.
McKnight Tonight.
Here it comes. Fun, insightful interviews from a washed-up producer with nothing to lose. McKnight Tonight. McKnight Tonight. McKnight Tonight. It's good night from McKnight Tonight.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.